No prophet is accepted in his native place. I think in a particular way, seminarians, deacons, probably priests, can kind of relate to this scripture, because once you're a seminarian or once you're a cleric, you're still just your parents' kid. You can't really preach to your parents in your native place because I'm still just Ty. You know, they raised me from the time I was a kid. They, even if I have wisdom, you know, they have more because they're older, etc., etc. So my words, even if I have something good to say, will fall on deaf ears in a way. They'll be blocked. There'll be obstacles in their hearts. And I'm sure we can all relate to this in one way or another with coworkers or family or friends, the people who just, oh, you're Catholic or you're Christian, so therefore you must be this. We can get boxed in people's minds because of what they think we are or what they think we know. That's exactly, of course, what happened to Jesus here, right? That, well, he's the son of Joseph. You know, Joseph's just this carpenter, and Jesus is a carpenter, and we saw him grow up. You know, what's he got to say? But then it makes a little more sense, though, that they're filled with fury and they try and kill him, because, you know, we can say, oh, he's the son of God. You know, he had these great things to say, which is true. But to them, he's claiming all of these things, and he sounds like a false prophet. And false prophets were supposed to be killed. But then he gets away because it's not his time. Because prophets were only supposed to die in Jerusalem, which of course is going to happen to him. But that's why he can say these things. And it's so strange though that, you know, he says these great things, and then it says that all spoke highly of him. They were amazed, so they must have liked it. And then once he challenges them, they're not open to it anymore. But this makes a little more sense if we go back to this first reading that we have from Jeremiah. And it's not in this passage, but it's really interesting in this section that when God is calling Jeremiah, he's basically telling him, look, I want you to go and preach to this people Israel whom you've come from. So one, it's his native place already. And two, they're not going to listen to anything you have to say. So it just seems like this exercise in futility that, well, I want you to go preach and they're already not going to listen to you. So what's the point, right? But it's interesting though with these obstacles and these difficulties that Jeremiah and Jesus face, because, you know, as a seminarian, you're interested in all these random facts about Scripture. And it wasn't until our Old Testament professor talked about girding your loins that it actually made sense. It just seems like this random verse, right? And he said, you know, it's not about just putting your pants on in the morning. The point of girding your loins is that you're getting ready for battle. That was something the Israelites did so that their robes were out of the way and they could run into battle. So these difficulties with Jesus, with Jeremiah, that we're going to face, it makes sense if there's this spiritual battle going on for our hearts and for the hearts of those we're trying to preach to, right? The devil's just going to put as many obstacles in the way as he can. And so then with our second reading, that adds a little more weight. If we're truly going to love people, then they deserve the truth, right? And I'm sure we've all heard these readings at weddings, and we may have had them for our own weddings. And it's a great reading from St. Paul, absolutely. But that familiarity that we have may make it seem a little bit less important than it is. Because if you think about it, he's not talking just about, you know, these feelings of love, these sentiments. He's talking about the choice, the will to love day in and day out. So it's a little heavier when, well, love is patient, love is kind, does not brood over injuries. And there's a movie, I think in 2016, a few years ago at least, about the Apostle Paul. And it was done really, really well. And St. Luke, who we think got a lot of his material from Paul, has come to Paul's jail cell. They've let him visit. And he's telling Paul everything that's happening in these communities that he's founded. And he's saying, you know, in the church and wherever it was, this leader has sprung up and, yeah, he's preaching the gospel, but he's putting you down. He's killing your reputation. He's turning people against you. You know, can't we stand up and can't we defend ourselves? Can't we fight back about this, you know, and tell them the truth? And Paul says, no, I only care that the gospel's being preached. And Luke protests again and again. And St. Paul just comes right out with this scripture. And I'm not going to do it justice, but it was so powerful because he just says, no, love is patient. Love is kind. It's not inflated. It's not rude. It does not brood over injury. And who, other than St. Paul, can really understand that, right? He had so many things against him. So this, for ourselves, this passage could be kind of an examination of conscience that, well, how was I with patience, with kindness, with jealousy? Was I selfish? Was I quick-tempered? We could think of it that way, and that's definitely important and necessary. But if we're going to preach this good news, that it's right before this gospel passage, Jesus says, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me. He has sent me to proclaim liberty to captives, recovery of sight to the blind. He's proclaiming this awesome message of salvation. If we're going to really preach that to other people, we have to have it for ourselves first. We can't give what we don't have. So maybe we can take this passage from St. Paul and turn it around to, how do I see God? Do I see his love for me as patient? That he is kind, that he's not jealous, that he's not pompous, that he does not brood over the injuries I've caused him when I've sinned. So if we take it like that, that's a good starting point, because that's going to help us to receive this awesome love and this salvation that he has for us. And then it's that much more convincing when we go to preach and to witness to that, to the people in our lives. Because even if they think they know who we are, that's going to make them stop and question and say, what does this person have that makes them so different than what I thought a Christian was and what I thought my friend was? So that's our task, especially in this year of the Eucharist. As we approach this Eucharist especially, let's open our hearts to the great love and mercy, the kindness, the fidelity that the Lord has for us, so that when we share it, it's that much more powerful.